Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders. Listen as they identify factors that drive innovation and measure significant business results. Be inspired and influenced by their insights and outcomes. Hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC.
Well, good evening and welcome to Significant Business Results Radio. I'm your host, Fran McNeil, and joining me in the virtual studio, I'm in Philadelphia and our Linda is in Pittsburgh, is our Linda Moriarty, and she is with Moriarty Consultants. Our Linda, welcome to Significant Business Results Radio. How are you this evening?
I'm fine. Thank you. And yourself?
I am doing well. You know, we actually had a great pre-show conversation, so I'm very excited tonight to be able to present you and have my listeners hear more about you, your business, and your story. You really have a fascinating story. So let's start there. I often ask entrepreneurs, what's the significant story behind them even getting on that path of entrepreneurship? And I know you've got some literally family ties that put you there. So please share with the audience some of that background.
Sure. As I had stated to you earlier, when I was young, around about 8 years old, I had this need or ability to want to organize things. And so when I was a child, I always liked to play office, because my mother would bring all the receipts home and all the things she would pay for, and I always wanted to organize the receipts. So I found that I like to organize things and kind of be in control of it in my own way. So as time had gone on, I found myself being a kind of organizer for the family. My grandmother had watched a lot of children in the, you know, in the area. We grew up in the Garfield Heights housing project, so my grandmother would watch people's children for like $2 a week or something like that, and a lot of the single moms needed to go to work, so they would pay my grandmother, you know, and my grandmother would just babysit. But I started feeling like, well, maybe we should organize this, and as I would, I started organizing when people would pay. You know, they pay on Friday. You know, I started charging them if they had two children, you know. And my grandmother, as, you know, time had gone on, she used to say, well, you know, I started not wanting to do that anymore, and I wanted to go hang out. So my grandmother said, you know, I actually miss your little business sense. And she started paying me like $1.50 a week, which if Grandma was alive right now, I think we'd have to have a talk about that. You know, I was organizing at least 10 kids here. So I think we need to talk. But, yeah, and then there was my grandfather. He owned a business, 35 years, and it was in the Strip District, Tony Brown's Auto Service. And I would go there, and also I started kind of organizing his books, receipts, you know, helping with the cars. And I always liked that, you know. And so, you know, even though I like working as an individual person, it seemed like I always liked just doing things in my own way or trying to lead the groups. And that's kind of where I learned I had a spirit, if you will, in what I do. Mm-hmm. So entrepreneurship kind of came upon me when I realized I like my own little things and own way of doing things.
Wow, that's really powerful. And it's kind of, I'm glad that you shared sort of the different circumstances where you got to see that connection between your passion, things that interested you, and things that you were good at, and things that other people relied on you for. Now, currently, in your business, in some ways, you are still in the organizing business. Tell us a little bit about the business that you now have, when you got started, and what you do in your business.
The business that I now have, amongst many of them, I have the largest enterprise, which is Moriarty Consultants. It's a home health care business, and we help people with disabilities maintain their independence in their homes. And I believe your question was, how did we get started?
Right. How did you get started? Because that's a very important area. Today.
Well, I often, you know, again, I'm a person myself with a disability, so I got started because, number one, I have been, you know, on the other side of the services. As I was growing up, I received services, you know, to, you know, be supported in, you know, supportive learnings and things such as that as I was growing up. I remember being someone who needed assistance, tutoring and things such as that. So first began, I was a client first. And then I also was a coworker because I worked in a place at, it's called the Centers for Independent Living, and 51% of the people had to have a disability to work there. So I had been involved with programs, and I've learned about the programs, and as I worked in those programs, I helped them grow to a multi-million dollar business prior to leaving there, and it was like around about $100,000 a year, and I grew it to $4 million before I left in the, at the end of 3 years. And so when I was there, they walked in one day and said, hey, we're a nonprofit. We don't need you to do a single thing more. We think that your spirit should be out there in, you know, in the world teaching people with disabilities that they, too, can do it in spite of it all. So I spun my business
wow.
out there. You know, I had a lot of fear. Because when most people wake up every day, they wake up and they know what they're going to do exactly. And, yeah, they may have difficulties. But when you wake up and you have a disability, and it's a permanent disability, if you wake up, you wake up with a disability. You have to know and support. You have to, you know, I'm no longer disabled. I'm supported when you have all your supports in place. But at any time you can become, you know, working, your disability can show up, just like diabetes, sugar, things, you know, sugar, diabetes, or high blood pressure, you know, anytime it's not managed, it can show up. So when I wake up in the morning, you know, if you have a cold, you wake up with a cold and ADHD. So this is what I knew about my own business, that a lot of times I myself could understand people. So when I decided to start my own business, I said to the world, I am going to go out there. Even though I had fear, you know, of leaving the nest, so to say, I wanted to go out there because I had learned a lot of skills, and I wanted to teach the world that I can do this as well as other, in spite of it all.
So what I'm hearing, and again, congratulations for overcoming that fear and really being a role model for a lot of other people, with disabilities, and also for entrepreneurs. So what I'm hearing you saying is, at a fairly early age, you needed services, and you also had an opportunity to work in organizations that supported people with disabilities. And one of the things that kind of put you on the path of entrepreneurship, literally combining your disability and the business world, is that you've helped an organization generate, go from $100,000 to $4 million. And as a result of that contribution that you made to that organization, they really said, hey, you should do this as a business. Am I hearing you correctly?
Correct. They said you should go out you know, because we're not a for-profit. You know, they're a nonprofit. They couldn't directly give me funding, but they felt like my spirit, they can give me reference. They can help, you know, support me as an individual, you know, connect me to the world that need, you know, to the resources. And they said, we will support you. You know, we'll have you advocate. We'll advocate, you know, for you. So when they said, go, we don't plan not to give you resources or help you out with understanding, you know, staying close. So they couldn't give you finance, but they gave me support, emotional. They helped me remember who I am. And
excellent. And that's really, really powerful. So when we were talking before the show started, you said that many times people ask you to be a speaker and talk about that process of becoming an entrepreneur. What are some of the tips that you often share with people about the challenges and the things to think about in terms of entrepreneurship?
Well, as I had said earlier, you know, I tell them to think about what it is they want to do, why they want to do it. You know, is this something that it's, you know, like osmosis, or did they really have a passion? Because long after the door is open, it's the commitment, you know, the commitment. So, you know, I often say, are you aware of your commitment to your business? Have you looked up, you know, Google, read about? You know, oftentimes when people ask me, I try to, you know, give them the the resource, because the conversation starts at where you and another person engage. So everyone that I encounter, I don't have the same things to say. It's not cookie cutter. So it's depending on someone when they come to me. It's a general conversation based on, you know, where we're at, you know, what we're talking about. If it's a speaking engagement and we're and I come away and they already have themselves organized, that's a different conversation. So if we're talking a general conversation or someone pointed looking for mentorship, I automatically ask them, what do you have on your business? Tell me your background. What did you learn? Where did you work? What is your business plan? So the conversations are for many people. It depends on the setting and who I'm talking to, the advice I'll give.
In your business currently, let's go back and talk a little bit about that. Currently, you're in four states, and you've grown the business starting in one state. Tell me about how your business grew and what are some of the philosophies behind you getting the right people in the right place to provide the services that your customers have come to really depend on?
Well, how I get the resources is, number one, you're in the industry, so there's a lot of people who are looking for promotions or looking for change. And so when you're a business and you're growing and there's a lot of opportunity, sometimes you can get the resources just from people. Social media is a great place now because a lot of times people are looking for jobs or, you know, there's career links. And so how I get the individuals is you can outright just say, hey, do you know anyone else in the industry looking for a job? If another company is getting ready to lay someone off, you know, you give your, you know, you give the word, hey, I'll be looking for someone if you know anybody. So a lot of times I build my team based on, you know, others. And I actually do go to the career centers. I think they do a good job nowadays, you know, credentialing people, and you just have to know what you need. And my philosophy is that as long as someone has the ability to learn and the willingness to pay attention, you can bring them where they need to be in their jobs based on their, you know, based on their abilities to learn.
Right. And we were talking about the fact that your company actually goes a step further. You did talk about the willingness to learn and the ability to pay attention, but you also talked about the fact that you have a training institute where for your employees, you put them through this institute so that they understand how you operate, what your values are for your customers. Can you talk a little bit more about that and why you do that?
Absolutely. That's why my statement of, you know, they have to come obviously with a base experience in some of the areas if they're going to work in a particular area. Like a nurse has to be a registered nurse. We can't, you know, build you from there. But if you come in and you are at a entry-level position, no matter if you're a professional, licensed, they all have to go through the Moriarty Institute. It teaches our mission, philosophy, base course services. All of our trainings are capable of being accredited to transfer into, you know, a university or a college so that you can move on. I mean, a lot of the credits would probably only count for your base courses, but electives, but the courses will lead you into or help you receive an associate's degree, and obviously you can move into a bachelor's degree, but not through our program. But it does give you credits. And our philosophies are well taught, and it does take over, you know, 2 years to complete the entire process. But the base process teaches you enough to go out into the field with our philosophy, our mission, our understanding. You would be able to explain where you work, who you work for, and what we believe in before you even go out and touch anyone in the field. That is a must before you can go out.
Now, Arlinda, your company is located in four states, Pennsylvania, Connecticut, Ohio, and Georgia. In choosing those four states, how did you decide on those? And how do your customers come to find out about you?
How we choose it's based upon, you know, like I had said, a lot of times people call and say, hey, you know, I've already networked in multiple places. So, you know, a lot of times if I'm speaking, like we're on this, you know, on the phone right now, other people inbox you, call you and say, hey, seems like you guys are really good at this. I went to your website. I noticed that you guys have this. You have an institute. We feel this way. So a lot of times we're invited. We're actually invited to other people's states, you know, by various people, service providers, you know, other people. And I also, you know, of course, market research. But because this service, you know, is a for-profit business with a nonprofit heart, a lot of people can see that. So they're interested in you. And a lot of times caregivers and their families, you know, they want you. And you end up looking through what it takes to become an enrolled provider there or how you get into business. So a lot of times it's by invitation of the people who need your service and the clients, how they find out. You market, but it's word of mouth. You really need to be good at what you do. And when you're not, you need to know how to make corrections.
And that's really powerful. I know I'm getting some texts from folks, and people are saying, Fran, so just clarify what Arlinda's company does. And I'm reading right here from the website that you offer skilled professionals that provide a range of home health care and disability services for your clients, which includes personal hygiene assistance, skill training, meal prep, personal care for medical, for daily living, medication assistance, community integration, and adult job coach.
We also offer physical therapy, occupational therapy, social work services.
So you're really able to help people kind of have a quality of life that they might not have if professionals weren't able to come into the home.
Correct.
Now, a few other people, because they have heard you in Pittsburgh, and I know that you received numerous awards over the years, a few people have said, Fran, please give Arlinda a chance to tell her personal story of overcoming challenges. And you kind of hinted at that earlier, but I think that is a powerful part when we, you know, look at you as an entrepreneur. You have overcome challenges. And would you just take a few moments to talk about how you've done that and how that has in some ways better prepared you to be an effective entrepreneur of a growing business?
Well, the first thing I had to do is identify what was holding me, distracting me. And I often needed to understand, sometimes I couldn't connect what was in my heart. What was in my heart didn't connect to my head. So I had to come to understand, you know, when I was a child, I had a disability. It was, you know, they didn't say, you know, she can't read, she can't write. It was just I wasn't very focused at times. So after I, you know, had become an adult, I found out just from a friend who had a child with a disability, you know, at that time, that they had defined more of what my symptoms had been over my life as a child, you know, going all the way up through high school. I did well in school, but school was not easy. Sometimes I had a self-esteem issue based on, you know, the struggle when things, you know, didn't come easy and I had to work 10 times harder. So, you know, when you finally get to an age and you find out what you potentially think it is, and then you find out after, you know, getting evaluated that this has been what it is, you're almost like, wow, okay, I finally know what it is, and I'm 30 years old. What do I do now? You know, and it was kind of like, an awakening in your mind when you find out, okay, I know everyone knew there was something, but no one knew what exactly it was, and it was ADHD. And so my personal story starts with, you know, when you're in third grade and you're at the table and you're sitting there with your friends and everybody at the table, you know, we're all equal until you start learning and you got to learn a different way. You know, I go all the way back to third grade, and I think from the third grade all the way up till I was 30 years old, you know, I knew how to do things. I had to do them my way. And so I was supporting myself, but I was uncertain of how I was doing it. And when I learned at 30 years old, okay, these are the things you did to understand, but now what about what professionals say, people who this is what they do for a living. And as a combination, you know, of my own self and actually surviving, you know, the self-esteem issues and surviving, you know, what most people wouldn't, I said, obviously, I was here for a reason. Obviously, this is my story, and this story needs told. And I didn't just tell the story. I lived the story, and I made it my mission to help not just myself but others, so that this is a story that's still being written, and I learn something every day. So my story and my book is still being written in my life. So hopefully, you know, I've allowed, you know, the doctors to use me in case studies to help, you know, with the insurance companies, making sure they know that adult ADHD is alive and it does exist. And now you can get your prescriptions paid, you know, because I became part of a study, you know. So my story is, you know, there's a lot of pain in the story because you start looking back saying, if only they could have. But what I feel like is I don't want to see anybody else go through the things I did when I know the way. You know, I don't look down on people other than to help bring them up. I look for people's story, and I try to say how that can apply to me, and I try to offer my story to others. And my goal is to show people how to live a meaningful life. You know, Maslow's theory of self-actualization, understanding, you know, that you can do it, but you need to know what it is you can or can't do. And understand there are things I will never be able to do, but the gift in that is that I now understand that. There was a point in time where I didn't realize that because my mind was too distracted. So I would constantly try to do something that was absolutely not within my talent. But that was the distraction. ADHD is not about the distraction. It's about the hyper-focus. That's the main key that people have to understand. So I had to understand, hey, you'll never be a forest ranger, you know, but I can organize your kitchen, you know. So a lot of people know what it is. They can't and can't do.
Right. So given that, and you talked a little bit about challenges, what's a favorite quote or philosophy that, you know, kind of keeps you on track and helps motivate you as a leader? Because you, in fact, are, you know, a lot of people count on you for jobs and a lot of people count on you for services.
Amen. One of the hashtags or statements I always make to people is success will not attack you walking down the street. So you have to be willing to put in the work to become successful. Again, success will not attack you walking down the street. It's not in the air, you know, it's not going to attack you. It's not a virus. You have to really want it.
And I'm smiling because the visual of that, I do think there are people that just think, hey, just because I show up, good things will happen. And there's a little bit of that. But again, what you're sharing is you've got to work for it. And adding to that, what you just mentioned is you also have to know sort of what's within your capability.
Absolutely.
So you don't you don't frustrate yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. You have to know when and where, and you have to know when you've done your level best or understood yourself. You know, you have to just know. There's a point of no.
So self-awareness is really important. When we, before we were actually on the air, we were also talking about something that women entrepreneurs are particularly aware of, and that's that sort of work-life-business balance. And I was hoping that you could share with the listening audience some of your philosophies on that as well, a balance and achieving balance.
It depending on what part of it affects you. Like if you're a wife, then you need to know if you're a wife or you have children, you know, you need to know you can't cheat on your children with your business. You can't cheat on your husband with your business. You have to sit down and know what levels of achievement you can make at points and times in your life where it makes sense. You know, you have to recognize that this is going to be a commitment, whether whether you have sickness, whether you have other goals, you have to recognize that there'll be days when it's really nice outside and you may not be the person that can take your children to the, you know, to the park. But remember, you cannot get those years back. So you have to be willing to sit down with the family and say what things you guys will miss out on. Write these things down and say, look, when I look into this, the average successful woman has to work this many hours. And there's a point in time where that may come up where you have to make a decision. And you guys have to plan every bit of it. Because if this is just a business for the moment, while you're raising your children because you guys want to find a way to make a second income, then you need to know. But if this is a lifelong business, then you need to know. Because if you did not start with a lot of money, then I promise you the sacrifice is going to be great. So there's a difference mm-hmm. in balance in family because you got to know how you're going to live.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned two things when we were offline that I jotted down and I wanted to share out loud. One was a comment that you made is money can't raise your children. And the second one was your business can't be your second family. And both of those I thought were quotable quotes and just wanted you to elaborate on those.
Basically, my son was 4 years old and he said to me, because I was like, oh, I'm going to get somebody to do this for you and you know that. And he walked in the kitchen. You know, you never know where children get things. And he said, Mom, money can't raise your child. Money can't raise your kid. And I looked at him and said, well, what? So he said, so you're going to have to do it. You know, and I'm like, okay, where's your dad? But, you know, I held on to that for years because someone else had told me that, like, don't put, you know, money between you and your kid, you know. So that's a given because you cannot get that time back. And don't cheat on your family. Don't let your business, you know, don't cheat on your family with your business. Because you can. It's easy because you become so passionate about it. And you will use excuses and say stuff like, well, if it wasn't for the business, you guys wouldn't be able to do this. Well, you can't have an affair with your business and expect to have a family. So, you know, you have to understand what it is that you're going to do.
Right, right. Very powerful. Arlinda, I'd love for folks to know how they can get in touch with you, where they can find you on the web. Will you take a few moments to share that? So people can follow up with you and ask you additional questions.
Sure. My www.moriartyconsultants.com, and you can also call us at 1-866-303-1156. We have headquarters
okay,
here at 3904 Perrysville, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. 15212, but we are located in multiple states, so therefore you can always get in touch with the company through our 1-800 number, 1-866-303-1156, and if in your city, we will connect you to the personnel that would be willing to, and able to take in your intake information for a job or for a client.
Oh, terrific, terrific. And just again for the audience, you're located in Connecticut, Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Ohio. And that number again is 1-866-303-1156. And the website, I'll just spell that out for folks, is www.moriartyconsultants.com. Arlinda, it's been absolutely fun and interesting talking with you. You've got a lot of energy, great perspective, very healthy perspective on life. And I wish you continued success as you grow your business and you find that balance between life and love and business and continue to do the great work that you're doing. It's very important, and I know your employees and clients really appreciate it.
Thank you, and I appreciate them as well. People can work anywhere, but they chose to work for me. So I appreciate that.
Right. Yes. Well, thank you. I look forward to hearing more about you and I also about your successes. And I also want to give a quick shout-out to Ola Jackson for recommending you to be a guest for the program. So continue to do the great work you're doing, and let's stay in touch.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Significant Business Results Radio features concise and compelling interviews with entrepreneurs and business leaders, hosted by Fran McNeil, President of Significant Business Results, LLC. Follow Significant Business Results Radio on blogtalkradio.com. slash significant business results.